Thank you. Good morning. So I would really like to know who I'm presenting to in my audience. And so if you could do me a favor, just by a show of hands, how many in this room right now are at a facility that is currently doing some form of routine screening? Okay, wonderful. And how many in the room are at a facility that is aspiring to do routine screening? All right, so most of you are already kind of in the ballpark of doing it. And Megan, that was a fantastic presentation to really do a lot of the background for why we're doing opt-out screening in a variety of healthcare settings. And today, what I'm going to present on is a very specific example of how you can use electronic medical record technology to really streamline routine screening, and that shouldn't be limited to HIV. These concepts and strategies, I think, could be used for a lot of other diseases, such as hepatitis C and a number of other epidemics that we are trying to combat right now. And using these electronic medical record technologies to really integrate this into our workflows without creating a lot of extra burden on our staff that we're asking to take on these extra responsibilities. So I do work, as it was mentioned, with the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Illinois Hospital and Health Sciences System. And our disclosures, we do receive funding support through FOCUS, the program of Gilead Sciences, as well as a grant through the Chicago Department of Public Health. I have no other conflicts of interest to report. And I'd like to thank our co-authors, Dr. Janet Lin, Dr. Sarah Bagikar, and Sweta Basnet, as well as our Project HEAL team members and our ED nursing staff for all the work they've done to make the program I'm about to present to you a reality. So a little bit of a background about our emergency department. We see around 42,000 patients, or patient visits, I should say, each year. We are an urban academic medical center, so we're a training facility for residents, a level 2 trauma, and our service area includes 5 of the 10 poorest neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, and we also reside in one of the higher HIV prevalence areas of Chicago, with over 1% HIV prevalence in the zip code in which we reside. That having been said, when we started this initiative, there was essentially no culture whatsoever of HIV testing in our emergency department. We would see, you know, a few hundred chlamydia gonorrhea tests in an average month in our emergency department, and at baseline in RED, we had an average of 7 HIV tests conducted every month. And so there really was no culture, and we started with kind of a clean slate of needing to do a lot of education and training on why this was something that was needed and appropriate for an emergency department to be doing. So our mission, Project HEAL, was to set out to develop an integrated opt-out HIV screening program that really used the electronic medical record technologies to streamline this process within our busy ED setting. And then by doing so, to increase the amount of HIV screening and the number of diagnoses that came out of our emergency department. And in order to do this, you know, it truly was a multidisciplinary effort. And I think that sometimes it seems really cliche to say you have to involve a lot of stakeholders and get buy-in from all these different people. But it really can't be underestimated the importance of having discussions with all of these people from the onset. You know, whether that was talking to lab about their ability to absorb all of this increase in testing that they would see as a result of our program, talking to patient accounts and billing to ensure that there wasn't going to be issues on the financial side of getting reimbursements for these tests and that they were aware of how to do that, working with our legal and risk management to ensure that our screening program was going to be aligned with the Illinois state laws around HIV testing and obtaining specific consent for that test. And so by working with all of these different partners from day one, we really avoided, I think, a lot of potential pitfalls along the way by having their buy-in and input. And the process of developing our program from when we really started digging in and trying to get it rolled out to the time when this actually went live in our emergency department was about a 7 to 8 month period. And depending on the hospital you talk to, they might say, oh, that's amazing, it took us 2 years. But for me, it was a very frustrating 7 to 8 months. I was really eager to get screening started in our ED, and it was a very iterative process of talking to a lot of different stakeholders, doing a very, very thorough assessment of the existing workflow in our ED so that we could see where we could incorporate these necessary components of pretest information, of getting consent, of actually ordering the test, documenting the consent, and how those things could be incorporated into the workflow without creating a lot of extra burden. And once we came up with those ideas, we would then meet with the different groups of stakeholders. We'd meet with the physicians who would tell us no on this, yes on that part, and then we would take that model and go present it to the nurses who inevitably would say, well, of course the doctor said that would work. They have absolutely no idea what's going on the front end in triage. And so then we'd recreate it and have, I started to have documents that said version 12, version 13. And then we would take that to our information systems department and say, all right, now we really want to build this into the EMR. And they would look at me and say, oh, honey, that would be great, wouldn't it? But no. No, that's probably not going to happen. Here are your two options. And so then I take that back to the physicians and to the nurses. And it was a very iterative process that, again, was really painful for me. But in the end, we had, I think, a model that really was sustainable, was integrated, and all the different parties understood why we had to make compromises in certain places because of either the limitations of the EMR or the workflow. So here's the meat of what we really want to talk about today as an example of how you can use electronic medical record technology to really streamline these processes. So one of the places that we felt that we didn't need an actual human being using their time and energy and resources was on the front end of just trying to determine who was actually eligible for this routine screening. We felt that that was not a good use of a nurse's time to say you're 13 to 64, you're not a previously diagnosed, when's the last time you were tested? And so we built an algorithm that looked at all of those areas of criteria for eligibility from the second that the person was registered into the EMR at registration. And so that algorithm would go in the background to see, you know, is this person 13 to 64? Yes. All right, now do they have any documented history of HIV in their diagnosis or problem list? If no, then it was looking to see, do they have any prior HIV tests documented in the EMR? And as Megan had mentioned, the CDC guidelines really don't provide a lot of excellent information in terms of the optimal intervals for HIV screening beyond saying that those who are at high risk should be tested perhaps as often as annually or every 3 months. And so our Preventive Services Committee had a real issue with the concept of us trying to do annual screening for everybody. They thought we were going to overscreen certain people. So this part of our algorithm really captures that once-in-a-lifetime screening. If they didn't have any prior HIV testing documented, they would get screened. However, we really weren't satisfied with that. We knew that that was going to mean we were going to underscreen a lot of high-risk people. So that gets us to our next part, which is we built a second algorithm that looked for some factors that we knew could tell us something about the patient. And this part, I always like to use the example of, you know, Target sending you baby coupons before you even know you're pregnant because they know so much of your data, that we can really start to look at all the data that you might not perceive yourself to be high risk, but what the EMR tells me is that you've came in for STD screening 7 times this year. And so we could use that kind of information to say this person on paper does look high risk. We should probably test them more frequently. And so the best piece of this algorithm that we know is catching the most people is that we built into the algorithm a part of it to look at zip code. So there are over 22 zip codes in Chicago that have over 1% HIV prevalence. We built that in so that people who reside in those zip codes are screened annually and not just once in a lifetime. Also, if they had a documented undomiciled homeless status in a queryable field, injection drug use, if it was actually documented under their social history that they were homosexual or bisexual and they were male, that also would trigger it to be annual. And so this is kind of a breakdown of an overview of what I just kind of explained in the two different components of our algorithm. So a patient registers in the emergency department, and in the background, the computer is asking, are they 13 to 64? If so, do they have a documented HIV status? And then it gets down to the risk factors. If no risk factors are present, it's saying, do they have any prior HIV test? If not, they're going to be eligible. If they do have one of those risk factors, it's looking, do they have a test in the last 12 months? and if not, they're going to be eligible. And then it is generating a patient care order that's telling the nurse to consent the patient for routine HIV testing, and is also creating this little icon that I'll show in a couple of slides that indicates to them that the patient's eligible. So this is one of the views, that this is an automatically placed order under patient care services where they see that the patient is eligible and needs to be consented for routine HIV testing. And this is a screenshot of our fake patients that are showing you the little H icon over there to the right, and I don't have a pointer, but where it says the visible icon to alert the nurse, those icons tell nurses what sort of orders they have to do, and so the H is one yet another visual indicator that they need to offer this person HIV testing, and that H won't go away until they complete the power form that we developed. And we use Cerner system, and so up in the top bar where you see all the icons, there's also an H, and when they click on that H, and a couple of slides, you'll also see what opens up there. When they click on the H, so they are talking to them about this HIV testing at the point that they're actually having their blood drawn. So again, we wanted to figure out when can they do this. It's not at triage. You know, during the point of their blood draw, they give them the one-line opt-out language of, today your blood work is going to include an HIV test unless you decline. Do you have any questions? And then if that person actually accepts the test or they do not decline, so through assent, they say, okay, they go in and they open up this power form. And that, again, is accessed through that one click on that H icon in the tracking shell. And in here, there's a couple of different components. One is we reinforce the language that they should be using of opt-out testing so that every time they open this up, they're reminded that it shouldn't be, we do testing here, do you want an HIV test? But rather, today your blood work will include an HIV test unless you decline. And we know that that opt-out language makes a really big difference in acceptance rates, in reducing the stigma, and in normalizing HIV screening in our settings. And so the really great thing then is they just document yes with one click there, and with the third click of the green check mark in the top corner, they have effectively documented consent, which is a requirement in Illinois, and they have also placed the HIV test order. So this algorithm, this form also has an algorithm attached to it so that when yes is marked, it automatically uses what Megan explained as a standing order to go ahead and place the HIV test. And so this was really, really about as streamlined as you could possibly fathom, that within three clicks they have managed to document the consent, order the test, and really just be done with it. And this is just an example showing you how that test is automatically placed there. If the patient refuses, we did, you might have seen in that form, have a spot for them to document the reasons for opt-out. And we did this for a couple of reasons. One is I like to think that it's an incentive for them to do the opt-out language correctly and get patients to be tested, because they've got one extra step if the patient opts out. But really, we also wanted to make sure that we were understanding why patients are opting out. Is it because there's saturation in our community of testing and they're, you know, being tested elsewhere? Is it because they don't perceive themselves to be at risk and we might need to ramp up our education? Is it because they already know they're HIV positive and that's just not documented in our system, et cetera? And so that field is a required field if they do indicate that the patient refused. And so we're collecting a lot of really interesting data from that right now as well. And the third option, and this kind of, I think, is an important piece, because I think when you're trying to integrate something like a preventive health screening in a busy area like an emergency department, you have to acknowledge that there's competing priorities and make compromises that will really allow this to be sustainable. And so while my entire job and everything, I live, breathe HIV and Hep C, I understand that in an ED there's a lot of other priorities. And so one of the compromises we made was that they do not have to offer HIV screening if the person is not having blood drawn for any other reason. So if they're just coming through the fast track and, you know, getting a splint on their ankle or something, they are encouraged to if time allows, but they do not have to. So one of the reasons they can mark for why the patient was not informed is that they did not have blood drawn for any other reason. And the second is that they were medically unable to consent. And so that's also a possibility that either the patient is inebriated, passed out in a trauma situation, that they cannot actually give their consent. And that's just an overview again of what happens if they're marking any one of those three options. And again, the lab test is automated. So what's the impact that this had on our ED practice? Well, first, you know, those 7 to 8 months of planning for the rollout of this really included a lot of training and education, and again, getting the buy-in from the staff about why should we be doing this. When I looked doctors and nurses in the eyes and said, how many chlamydia gonorrhea tests do you think we do every month? And they're like, woo, you know, hundreds. And I was like, yeah, I know, right? So many people coming in here for STD testing. How many HIV tests do you think we do a month? Just silence. And I was like, oh, and can you guys remind me, what are the different risk factors for getting those diseases? And they were like, oh, well, And so I said, you know, if that's your brother, if that's your sister, if that's your mom, it's not a good excuse that just because it requires a blood draw, we should not be offering that service to them. And so we really started to get that buy-in. And I think the time we spent with that and the fact that these EMR tools really remove so many of those barriers to time constraints, they don't have to go and look for the order, they don't have to write up a note for consent, made it almost impossible for them to have much to complain about. And luckily, I can say they really haven't had any complaints. You know, in 3 clicks, we allowed them to document the consent, to order the test, and really just be done with it. And in one sentence, they get to inform the patient. And so, again, what I'd like people to take away from this, you know, you might not have Cerner system, you might not even have an EMR, but if you do have an EMR, I think you really want to start thinking about, whether it's for HIV or for other diseases, how you can use this to determine the patient eligibility, to document consent refusal for those that require that, and for actually doing some of these automated orders of tests, because I think this has a lot of opportunity to help streamline these preventive health services in busy settings. So it really helps to start with almost no testing at all, because you get to have a cool, crazy number of a percent increase that is 7,729%. First time we calculated it, someone's like, I think you got your zero in the wrong place, a few too many there. And I was like, no, that's actually real, that we went from an average of 7 HIV tests a month to 540, and that has been sustained. Thanks. That has been sustained over the last year. We rolled out November 18th, and we really are seeing a consistent 540. And what's more exciting even than that is that when we did a baseline and went back and did chart review of HIV positives, there had not been a single HIV diagnosis that came out of RED in the prior months. And we are now diagnosing around 1 to 2 new HIV diagnoses every single month. And we have had 3 acute diagnoses as well, with someone with a viral load as high as 10 million. Because we're using the fourth generation testing. And I think that, you know, sharing these kinds of numbers with our providers, when you look at that graph, it becomes very clear that HIV positive people didn't all of a sudden just start showing up in our ED, and that they realized they were missing these people and sending them out of our hospital undiagnosed, and that doesn't feel good. And so it really, I think, has helped to get a lot of buy-in for people to see the impact and the importance that this has. So in terms of our conclusions, we hope that, you know, what you can take away from this is that even in a very busy urban academic where there's a lot of priorities, whether it be teaching or just doing acute care in an emergency setting, that routine screening is feasible, and that these smart, what we refer to as smart EMR prompts and these automated orders really can help facilitate that integration of the screening into the existing workflow. And I can't reiterate that enough, the importance of the integration. We talk a lot about sustainability and, you know, that old dedicated tester model. I mean, once the funding dried up, testing stopped, and we really need to get away from that and figure out smart ways to integrate this into our systems. And the last point is, you know, I talked about the 7 to 8 months we spent with all the back and forth of the assessment. You really have to learn what the limitations are, either with your own EMR, what the limitations are within your given workflow, the number of patients coming through, and really tailor these innovations to your setting. Even now, as we are rolling out into our inpatient setting and into our FQHC and primary care, we're having to use a lot of these same strategies, but really tailor them to those different settings, because it's not a one-size-fits-all. And so make sure that you're not trying to kind of put a square peg into a round hole, and really take into consideration the unique challenges in your given setting. this is our information, and I will be here afterwards, and I have my card. I would love to take additional questions or talk to any of you who might have more specific questions. But we do have a website with a lot of different resources. You can follow us at Twitter or contact us at projecthill@uic.edu. Thank you.